Excuse me, sir. There's been a little problem in the cockpit.
The cockpit? What is it?
It's the little room in the front of the plane where the pilots sit. That's not important right now. You see, the first officer is ill, and the captain needs someone to help him with the radio. Do you know anything about planes?
Well, I flew in the war, but that was years ago. I wouldn't know anything about it.
Would you go up, please?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
The blockbuster film Airplane premiered 40 years ago this month, and I know what you're thinking. Surely you can't be serious. Well, the film revolves around ex-Air Force pilot Ted Stryker boarding a flight with the intention of winning back flight attendant Elaine Dickinson, who he believes is the love of his life. Unfortunately, the passengers and the pilots aboard the plane all fall gravely ill, requiring Stryker to take charge. But this setup is really only there to tie a series of surreal, unforgettable jokes. There are puns, there are pratfalls, double entendres, references to film and TV and popular commercials, random acts of silliness and absurdity. And now Airplane riffs on the Airport series, particularly Airport 1975 and Irwin Allen disaster films like The Poseidon Adventure and The Towering Inferno. And the movie's creative team, David and Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrahams, are second to none. It's been listed as one of the top 10 funniest movies ever made by the American Film Institute. The movie featured Leslie Nielsen, Lloyd Bridges, Peter Graves, Robert Stack, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lorna Patterson, and the leads of the film, Julie Haggerty, and our guest tonight, who played Ted Stryker, Robert Hayes. Bob, thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure.
This is, you know, I can't, first of all, 40 years ago, what was your first impression when you read the script? Did you think they were out of their mind, or did you just laugh your ass off?
Yeah, I laughed. I mean, I was on a plane flying from L.A. back to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and with Donna Pescow, that I was doing a series called Angie with
right.
at the time. And I was reading the script because I had a meeting the following, I think it was Tuesday, and we flew back just for the weekend for the TV station had changed from NBC to ABC. Mm-hmm. It was the oldest TV station west of the Mississippi, and so that was a big deal for ABC to get that,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
So we had Howard Cosell and all kinds of ABC people, and they flew us all back there.
That's cool.
And I read the script on the plane, and there was something on every page that made me laugh out loud. It was just so funny.
The audition, you know, what I've heard you say before, you know, obviously they were looking at other people, but they pretty much liked you right off the bat. They said, yeah, no, this is the guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was great. I had an agent, in my agent's office, he brought in a new agent named Beth Voigtu, and she'd worked with Howard Koch on something, I don't know what, before, but she knew him, so she called him up and said, Howard, I got your guy. I got your Ted Stryker, because they'd been looking everywhere and they couldn't, all over the country.
Yeah.
And they couldn't find Ted or Elaine. And so they said, well, bring him in. So she brought me in and they liked me and I liked them. We all got along great. Then they liked my reading. And then I got to screen test with Julie. And that was really lucky for me. I think for both of us, it just looked like you could see the pair, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
and so it was great. It was just, I mean, talk about winning the lottery all the way along. You know, I just was, I lucked out having Beth know him and call up and having us all get along so well and then liking my reading and then being able to work with her. I mean, it was just wonderful. And then you got all the other people that you got to work with. Bob Stack. I had gotten to know him before when I was a guest star on a TV series he was doing called Most Wanted. And he was one of the neatest guys I ever met. I love him. And Lloyd Bridges, Lloyd was great. Peter Graves was wonderful. And Leslie was nuts.
But that was his first dramatic role. I mean, people don't know that. Like, or first comedic role. He was a dramatic actor for all of his life.
Yeah, dramatic stuff and also light comedy, but he wasn't, you know, like the one of the casting people, I don't know who it was, but one of the casting people, when the boys called up and said, we want Leslie Nielsen, and they said, Leslie Nielsen? That's who you hire the night before you're going to shoot because you can't get anyone else.
Wow.
And they said,
yeah,
that's who we want. And you know, and then later, I don't know, I'm sure that all the people, you know, involved with it take credit for it. But it was the guys. It's who they wanted. They wrote it. They had their vision. They knew what they wanted. And, you know, even though they got blowback from all levels. But Mike Eisner did, like the boy said, he had some great ideas, and they did follow along with a lot of the things that he said, and he was right. And they wanted to do it black and white, but he said, well, you know, and they said, we're really adamant about that. And he said, well, I wish you the best. I hope you do make a really good picture. You're just not going to make it here.
Oh, he was like, wow.
Make color or you make it somewhere else. But yeah, I tell you what, it's Friday, so you go think about it in the weekend, and you come back, and we'll talk next week. So he said, and I want it to be a jet plane, not a prop plane. So they finally said, okay, we got a chance. We might as well do it. Let's make these concessions. And so they made it color, and they made it a jet plane. But they got him back by making prop sounds.
Gotcha.
And that's joke.
So yeah, right.
Laughed and said, okay, all right, you got me. But it was very funny. And that's another part of the joke of the whole film. So they're just amazing. Those guys are just amazing.
Did they seem apprehensive at all? Like, again, like, and I've heard Peter Graves was like, what? The script is garbage. Like, you know, in the beginning.
Oh, it was the worst thing he'd ever read. And he threw it down, and his daughters and his agent said, no, come on. You got to look at this again. And I don't know. Lloyd was a little unsure about what is going on. Leslie had always wanted to do that. But he was a little apprehensive about it's kind of like what he said. He walked up to the door, but it was the boys that pushed him through.
And
so he had wanted to, and he was doing things a little too broad, and they finally got him to, no, we want that sonorous voice of yours. And he got everyone to understand, we want this to be serious. The first guy that they thought of was Bob Stack. And they just thought, when they saw this and they thought about doing it as a film, they thought, Robert Stack, Elliot Ness. Mm-hmm. They wanted that thing. And he got it. Lloyd, it took a while for him to get it. And then when he finally got it, he ran with it. And he really took to it. But the guys were very smart that they wanted everyone to play it straight. Do it straight. Let the audience laugh.
Yeah.
When you're laughing, you know, it's like when you laugh, you're laughing for the audience. If you're laughing at yourself when you're up on stage, the audience just sits there and watches it because you're already laughing for them. They don't have to laugh.
Well,
you've taken it away.
And here's the thing I read that I didn't know is the movie was loosely based around a 1957 drama called The Zero Hour. And I know there was other things like From Here to Eternity and Saturday Night Fever and everything, but The Zero Hour was kind of a...
Not very loose. Not very loose. It was very, very, very much based on Zero Hour.
Okay, all right, okay.
To the point when they said, because they taped it. One night they used to set the tape recorder going, and they would tape the movies, midnight movies.
Oh, I love that.
And then they would look at all the commercials so they could make fun of the commercials, you know, do, you know, satires of the commercials during their show.
Yeah.
The Kentucky Fried Theater show that they did. And then they saw this, and they started to speed through it to get to the commercial and said, wait a second. And they started watching it, and they said, oh, my God, this is great. And so they started doing, they wrote the screenplay, and then when they finally got the go-ahead, they said to their agent, well, we kind of based it sort of on this thing, Zero Hour. Do you think we need to get the rights to it? And the agent watched Zero Hour and looked at the script and said, no, you definitely get the rights to it. So they looked all over, and they got half the rights, but they couldn't find them anywhere. And it was getting down to the wire. And they had to have the rights, but they couldn't know, where are they? And then finally, it was like one little guy back in the copyright room or whatever said, huh? Oh, the rights? Yeah, they're right over here. The other half of the rights were there at Paramount the whole time, buried back in the archive somewhere.
Wow.
Because those things, you know, they'll tend to, somebody will get the rights, and then they'll just stick it in a stack of paper somewhere, and it's kind of lost, filed away or something.
Fascinating stuff. We're talking to actor Robert Hayes, Ted Stryker, on the 40th anniversary of blockbuster film Airplane, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN.
like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking. It's like I picked the wrong week to quit drinking. Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to actor Robert Hayes. Start with a blockbuster movie, Airplane, as we celebrate the film's 40th anniversary. So
I love that guy. I just love that guy.
He's a good guy. He is a really good guy. You know,
I tell you, every single person was aces in that. I mean, they were all so great. And Lorna Patterson, Lorna is unbelievably talented. She's so great. And Julie, I can't even imagine anybody else playing that, but Julie,
right?
She's so incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And here's something I found out recently is too. You were playing a pilot. You were a licensed pilot at that time, weren't you?
Yes.
Look
yes, I was.
Look at you. Did you keep that up? I mean,
and
is that something?
My dad was he was a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps. And he was in World War II, Korea, Vietnam. He's a long time. He was in. And I said afterwards, it came to the screening and at the DGA, and so that was fun for me, you know. And by the way, there was a person right in front of me that was howling, and I almost reached up and tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Hey, do you mind?" I mean, it was so loud, it was like, "God, man, I want to hear it." And I'm glad I didn't, because it was a very famous actress.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. So, but anyway, I asked my dad afterwards, "So what'd you think of my flying?" And he kind of looked at me like, but they laughed.
Yeah,
they laughed.
Gotcha.
And Bob Stack was so, they came to visit on the set, and Bob Stack was so great. He said, "Well, John, it's nice to meet you." And, or Colonel, maybe he said Colonel Hayes, maybe to my dad.
That's cool.
He said, "It's really nice to meet you." He said, "You know, the way I look at it is, Bob was a guest star on my show, and now I'm a guest star on his show."
Nice. Like, yeah, hello.
It was just so neat of him to say that.
Yeah. No, but, absolutely.
But anyway, it was magic. Absolute magic.
You know, when you played it straight, you know, even Leslie, to a degree, played it straight. Was that the kind of direction you were given, or did you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted. You know, the way I talk about it is there's a little astral projection of yourself, especially if you're on stage, but it's with film too. And the little guy or whoever, you know, girl for a girl or guy for guys, is just kind of standing next to you. And with some of these guys, some of the people that do comedy, it's kind of like they're looking at the audience saying, "Hey, huh? What do you think? That's funny, huh? Isn't it? Hey, that's funny." But with us, my little astral projection was looking at the audience and saying, "What are you laughing about? This is serious stuff," which made them laugh even harder. And that's the brilliance of the guys. That's
right.
That's the in school and I was in, you know, in regional theater and everything. That's what I really liked. I had this frown in my gut when I was doing comedy. I had a smile in my gut when I was doing heavy stuff.
When you were doing the Saturday Night Fever stuff, yeah, that was you kept that face. Like, and I know it you rehearsed for weeks to get that just right, but that was, you know, that was a lot of emotion, a lot of craziness, a lot of physicalness in that scene, and your face just didn't change through the whole thing. It was fantastic.
It was so fun. We had, we had Joe. We had two guys, Lester Wilson and Joey. Ooh, I can't think of Joe's last. Flanagan, I think.
Okay.
And anyway, they were our choreographers. And Joe is a choreographer, I think, with Disney. He was sort of like a staff choreographer that helped on all their movies and musicals and all the shows that they would do. And Lester was apparently he was the guy on Saturday Night Fever that gave the feel and style and thing that gave Johnny a lot of the moves. And, you know, what's the guy's name that they always give the credit to? Is it kind of Italian name? I think I can't think of it right off the bat.
Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah.
But Lester was this guy, just this delicious move, this black guy that was wonderful. He was just, he moved great. And he gave us a lot of the feeling about that stuff. And so the both of them worked with us for 2 weeks, I think. And when we got there, and this was one of those times when I was working on Angie, and then I'd go over there and we would shoot that, and I'd go back and then I'd come back over. And, I mean, we only had a certain amount of time in that bar scene. And then we had to move on because we had it was a small budget.
Yeah. It was like $3.5 million. Yeah, I saw that. $3.5 million to make. $83 million, though, it made at the end of the day.
Oh, it's made more than that.
Oh, yeah. When it opened in 1980, it was the fourth largest blockbuster hit back then. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's made way more than that. Absolutely.
Yeah, but like they said, they made the money so fast, they made it faster than the studio could hide it. So, you know, that's the old joke is that they're always hiding the money so well. They say that they're hoping that this year Gone with the Wind is finally going to go into profit. So
nice.
It made a lot. It was the largest money-making comedy of all time for a long time, up until some of these big money ones. I think Something About Mary and Ghostbusters and, you know, these things that we were $3.5 million and these things were $75 million or, all the big money. I don't know what all that cost, but it was huge money. I heard that from my publicist, and then I was having lunch with Howard Koch one day at the commissary with Paramount, and I just heard that morning. And I said, Howard, I heard that we were the largest money-making comedy of all time until Ghostbusters. And he kind of sat there, and he looked up like he was thinking, and he said, I think we still are. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He's kind of adding up figures in his head. Oh. We still are. And so that was pretty cool. But it was, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. I'll jump into something here. So one of the...
I remember.
Yes, go ahead.
To borrow a line from Steve Martin, I remember. I was radioactive. No, that was a different joke.
Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking about the boys, and just it was how wonderful they were, and how I think where I was going to was people talking about how it was so all of a sudden there was a buzz around town every day. Army Archer, who was the columnist in the Variety, I think, or the Reporter.
Yeah.
But I think it was Variety.
He has Variety.
But he every single day, there's another funny thing they're doing in that movie, Airplane, and he'd have another scene. Every day he had something in there. It was going around. And they also were showing the dailies. And at the studio... I used to hear about, you know, how they would, you know, like, I can't go dailies today, get my secretary to go, I got to go brush my teeth, or, you know, it was just like, but with these things, they had to run them over and over, like, four times to get all the people in, because everybody wanted to see the dailies.
We're talking to Robert Hayes from Airplane, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN.
We have a visitor.
Hello. Hi.
This is Captain Over, Mr. Murdoch, and Mr. Basta. This is Joey Hammond.
Well, hi, Joey.
Come on up here. You can see better.
Joey, we have something here for our special visitors. Would you like to have it?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Sure. You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
State Player here on 720 WGN. We're talking to Robert Hayes, Ted Stryker of the blockbuster movie Airplane on its 40th anniversary. At that time, 1980, I was heading into eighth grade. And I will tell you, I'm just telling you. And I'm just telling you, though, that going that whole summer, going that entire school year into my freshman year, my sophomore year, I don't think I've ever repeated so many lines from a movie, maybe Goodfellas down the road, but from a movie than Airplane. I mean, just, and today you could still say some of
Shirley,
the things.
Oh, Shirley, you can't be serious. I am serious. Don't call me Shirley. And that more than anything else led to my drinking problem. And, the hospital, what is it?
Yeah.
You know, the cockpit, what is it? Sure. Oh, yeah. They're just, They're constant.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Here, I got some fun facts here. I want to throw these by you. And David Letterman and Bruce Jenner read for the part of Ted Stryker. Is that right? Is that valid?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Letterman. They told me that Letterman didn't. Well, I watched the show when they were guests on the show, and unbeknownst to him, they brought his screen test, and he wasn't very happy. But he doesn't like, apparently, from watching his show, he doesn't like to have people pull something on him.
Yeah,
he likes to pull stuff on people, but he doesn't like to be embarrassed or surprised or whatever. So, but I guess that kind of. Embarrassed them a little, but they're huge fans, but they realize that he's really not an actor. He's a comedian.
Yeah, right.
And he didn't really want to do it. His agents, said, well, come on, David, you got to do it. But he didn't really want to.
Gotcha.
But he was funny. He was very, very funny. But when you say, okay, hey, cut two, take two, let's do it again. Well, then you got to say the same things again, and it's a script, and he likes to kind of go off.
Yeah,
So
most
he was
comedians
very,
don't like rehearsing.
He was relieved because he didn't want to have to do that.
As I say, most comedians don't like to rehearse. They want it fresh, and they want it in front of an audience. And to do it five times loses its luster. You're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah. You do it the second time, it's like, well, wait a minute, they already heard the jokes.
Yeah, right. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. The Mustang in one of the scenes was owned by you. Yeah.
My Mustang Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I drove to work, and that was a 66 Mustang convertible. And Howard said, we need your car, because it was a convertible. And they were doing the rear screen projection, so he said we needed that. So Sally got, $35 a day?
Yep,
and it was 2 days, so I got $70.
Look at that.
It was a big, big money, I tell you.
Yeah, but what a great car, too. And just as an aside here, don't you also have like a Volkswagen bus that you bought?
I have
a
66 Volks bus. I got it in 68 and still have him. Buster, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I lived in him for a couple of years while I was in all this stuff, in college and discovering, this acting thing. And I had a job. There were a lot of student jobs, like student janitors. You clean the classrooms. The area that I cleaned was the gym. So I would just take my shower while I was cleaning the gym.
Smart.
So it worked out great.
Some other facts here. This is the movie that killed Ethel Merman. This was her last. This was her last performance when she played herself. She was only 72, by the way. I mean, she wasn't ancient.
Really? Oh, my God.
I know, right? Because, not our 72 today, but she was only 72 years old when she made that appearance, but that was apparently her last.
We did her in.
You did her in. The part of the Jive Lady was written with Harriet Nelson in mind, who played in The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, but she turned it down because she didn't like the adult language in the script.
She was worried about that. I met her afterwards. I met her. Actually, it was at a screening, I think, of Angie or something like that. She was there, I believe. I met her, and she was the sweetest lady. My God, she was wonderful. And she was so like, oh, I loved that so much, but I'm so sorry I didn't do it. I just was so worried about that language. But now afterwards, she was really, really sorry she didn't do it.
I bet.
But Barbara Billingsley, Barbara was fantastic.
Ah, she swears like a sailor. She doesn't care.
Yeah, well, I kind of understood that afterwards. But it's very funny because, the Beeves' mom, and Leave It to Beaver, and she could make a sailor blush. So it was pretty cute. But she was so good at it. And Al and Norm were the two black guys, the black jive.
Mm-hmm.
And they went up to the boys and said, do you mind if we change this dialogue? Because the dialogue was, yo, she mofo, she mofo, she mofo. Yeah. That was it.
Written by white
guys. And they said, please, please, we're three white Jewish guys from Milwaukee. What do we know? We don't know anything. Please.
You're right. It's true.
And so they wrote their own scene.
Legendary.
And then when Jim came up to me at the end of one day and he said, okay, we're going to shoot the scene. I think it was the Japanese general coming in, Harry Carey, and also I think it was with Jesse, the guy that played the Indian guy with the turban,
yep,
and
yep.
doused himself.
Yep.
And for
sitting
those scenes,
yeah.
He said, we need more dialogue. We need more dialogue. So write something tonight. And I just freaked out. I went, what? Write something. Holy. And then I said, calm down, Bob, calm down. And I thought, I bore people to death. Okay, I can be boring. It's okay. And so I went home and I wrote all this stuff, and a bunch of it got in. But it was just me rambling. So
It was one of the best scenes. No, it was, because he had no language. He had no lines whatsoever. It was all you. Oh, that's very funny. That is. I know, right? You're still laughing.
He was so wonderful. Jesse was so great. But the poor guy, I kept having to take that dramatic pause about... Do I go to the cockpit? You know, what is it? Well, it's a little room where the pilot sits, but that's not important right now. And I just kind of look, and I think, well, oh, gosh. And I'm thinking, well, geez, should I go? And I turn to him, and he's nodding like, yes, please. But the whole time, the match is burning down. And it burned his fingers. We had did like five takes on that. And he was moving his – every time he moved his fingers, if you looked at all the takes, you'd see how he's holding the match.
Yeah.
The next take, he's holding it way down further. And by the last take we were doing, he was holding the tiniest little
bit
at the end of the match because it just kept burning
all
the way
down. I got to
watch
that again. I got to see that again. That's awesome. That's what it is. Here's what something I love about you, Bob, and I know this about you. You know, so many people run away from iconic roles that might have first defined them in the early parts of their careers, but you have always, always, always worn this film, as you're laughing still at these lines today, as a badge of honor, because it is that good.
I love it. I love it. And it never interfered with anything. Like when I did Hamlet with Spielberg, it never interfered with that.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't that popular. Maybe you never heard of it, but you know, it was what he was hoping would be a big blockbuster, but it kind of flopped.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm kidding, but
you're proud of it. No, I know, but you're proud of this. But you're proud of this film, and that's what I love.
I tell you, it was, aside from the birth of my son and my family, my folks, my family. Aside from that, I mean, this was the greatest thing ever in my life. And I got to meet the boys. I got to meet Julie and Howard and Lorna and all the people, you know. I mean, it was just, and to work with them. And every day you'd come to work, you couldn't wait to get there.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it was like, I only want to go home because I'm tired, but I don't really want to go home. I want to keep going.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was so fun. It was just, I mean, if you like going to work and laughing your tail off every day.
That's right.
But you can't laugh. You got to keep a straight face.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, here's what I love. Apparently, at some point, this movie's going to be back in theaters for a weekend. And I know it was postponed because of what's going on in our world today. But it should be coming back to theaters at least for a weekend or two. And I know there's a new Blu-ray coming out in the Paramount Presents line. It's going to be a limited edition Blu-ray steelbook. And that's coming out on July 21st. So hopefully you're still getting some checks. Hopefully you're getting checks from this.
Great. Well, I didn't know that until you just told me. So that's nice.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Paramount is not that communicative. But, you know, I mean, I was thinking about, you were talking about the dialogue still, all the lines that are still. There's a thing called Cameo where people call up, you know, they buy a cameo from you, and I do those. And
do you really?
Every single time they're saying, can you do, you know, surely you can't be serious. I'm just serious. Don't care. Can you do that? Or can you do a line from Airplane? Or can you do... Every single time. It's so cute. It's really, really fun.
We've been doing movies in the backyard, like, because we're not going out so much. So we got the screen that I bought, if I might just share this with you. About 10 years ago, never put it up, this massive screen in the backyard. Bought a projector. And so literally since beginning of May, we invite a family or two. We distance in the yard in the backyard, and we've been playing movies.
Popcorn and hot dogs and everything.
It's a drive-in.
Oh, great.
Airplane is next.
A little Jack Daniels for the kids. And
well, yeah. So we can watch something after. You bet. That's true. It is true.
That is great.
Yeah.
I was living at Malibu Lake until the fires a year and a half ago, which burned me out, so I'm not there anymore. But what they did was they set that same kind of a thing up. They started out using a sheet, and they'd stretch the sheet. They'd, yeah. We have a little island out there, and they'd do it on the island, and then later they did it over near the clubhouse.
Sure, simple.
The big grassy field where we have softball games. It's kind of like Mayberry, but 1 year they decided they wanted to do Airplane, and they asked me to come, and I knew everybody. But I got up, and I talked to everybody before, and of course everyone's sitting there, and this wasn't with all this distancing thing going on now.
Right.
This was, 10 years ago or whatever it was, 7 years ago. And so everyone was there with their little lawn chairs and their bottles of wine, beer, whatever they had. And I got up and I just told them about it and talked about it a little bit. And then they just asked questions, which is what David and I do. We go around and we do this all over the country.
That's
with,
cool.
They do screenings,
that's gotta
and
be
then
thrilled.
They showed the, and then they showed the movie, and it was so fun, and everybody had such a great time.
Yeah, it is really timeless. I mean, when you talk about movies from back then, you're going to see little things maybe that are really from that era, but honestly, the comedy is timeless.
Absolutely, because it was done so well, just so spot on. So the next time you're going to have the backyard screening,
yeah,
and you're going to show Airplane, you got to get David and me to come back, and then we'll talk with
let's do that
everyone.
We'll put you on the Zoom.
That's right. Yeah.
I love it. All right, I'm holding you to that.
That's what great. Have I done? Oh,
well,
what have I done?
No, thank you, Bob. I appreciate it, pal.
Great fun. Thank you.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh?
LA departure frequency 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh?
Request vector. Over.
What?
Flight 209er clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?